Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mbudiwa Gabaza, and for today, we are going to be getting into, a discussion around property, the property sector, the economics of property, but more specifically, some of these industrial parks, that are slated most of the time, to try and spur some type of an economic activity. There are many of them in and around South Africa, but for today we are talking to a South African company that is investments in a park that is in Nairobi, and maybe getting a sense of what some of the rationale is for that investment, and maybe some of the lessons that could possibly be learned here in the local market, or perhaps vice versa as well. So to make sense of it all, we are joined by the team, Impact North, which is a company formed by unlisted SA Property Investment Group that is Improvon. They are, private equity investor actors. So we're just going to be talking to them just around that. We've got a team from Impact North as well as Improvon to lead us through the discussion. So on that front, we have Dean Shiloh, who is the MD of Impact North, and we also have Mark Truscott on the line, who is the head of leasing at Improvon. Mark, maybe I'll begin with you before we get to the park itself. Maybe you could give us the elevator pitch, on Improvon, where you guys sit, in the ecosystem, because, when it comes to property, it's a very broad sector that people are dealing with. But where are you guys, in that ecosystem? Where are you guys on the spectrum?
Look, so we are, well, first of all, thanks for having us today, Mandiwa. But yeah, so we are, as you mentioned, an unlisted private fund. We have a private equity arm, which is 50-50. So Improvon was started about 25 years ago. It's a family business, and they saw an opportunity to invest in industrial property. So industrial property has now sort of moved into what's been separated into the logistics and the industrial sector. So, broadly speaking, it's industrial property, but, we don't invest in big buildings with smokestacks and heavy industry and things like that. So we do definitely focus on the cleaner industrial side. So we would sort of see ourselves sitting in the logistics, warehousing, and distribution sector. So providing facilities for users of those warehousing facilities. So, it's very much focused in the 3PL. So that's third-party logistics industry. The likes of DHL, DSV, those kind of household names. Also a big focus on, the online companies, the likes of Amazon, Takealot, et cetera. So, that's becoming a big focus in South Africa, and across the sub-Saharan sector, we see that as a huge growth opportunity for us. So about 7 or 8 years ago, Improvon was potentially considering listing. We went on a bit of a roadshow. Then we got approached by various private equity entities. And we joined up with Actis, which has a big footprint in sub-Saharan Africa as well as the world. Their mandate was more on the sub-Saharan African property side of things, one of their private equity funds. So they joined us on a 50-50 basis. Originally, the mandate was to develop and hold industrial property or logistics properties north of the South African borders. So hence our investments in Zambia and in Kenya. They've come along and joined us in South Africa as well. So, obviously I had to go get board resolution for that, but we see South Africa as such a strong sector. It would have, I don't think the investment would have been whole if they hadn't joined us on the South African side of things. So, it's a holistic view that they took. And we continue to develop out. I mean, our big developments, Dean will go into it shortly, but our big developments and our big focus at the moment is on Nairobi Gate in Kenya. We continue to develop in South Africa. We own various industrial parks here and continue to look for land positions and opportunities to service the demand. We see big demand in the industry and in the sector. So, yeah, that's sort of where we at the moment.
All right. I think that gives us, a good overview, of what's going on in the company, as well as, the project, the partnership, with the partnership with Actis, looking at your various properties and investments. We can just, go north because, Dean is joining us from Kenya and he's just going to be giving us some of that insight of what's going on. So, Nairobi Gate, what are we looking at when we think about, something like Nairobi Gate? And when it comes to, your investment in a project like that, right? Once again, one of those things where there tend to be a lot of different players and stakeholders in some of these parks. How much of it, whatever you can use to contextualize to us, your position in that particular park, and I guess the rationale for getting involved there, Dean.
Yeah, thanks for having us. Impact North is a division of the Impact One business, which focuses on Kenya specifically. What it looks like is a 100 acre or 40 hectare development on a major linear growth corridor of Nairobi, where we, in line with the business strategy, develop light industrial facilities that have greening provisions, which are available to tenants, investors, and operators in perpetuity, really, to allow them a platform to realize not only building quality benefits, like a truck reticulation turning around and efficiencies thereon, but also a platform that gives you tax benefits that are simply unparalleled in the African continent at the moment. An example of this is if you operate from Nairobi Gate Industrial Zone, instead of paying 30% corporation tax, you pay 10% corporation tax. Instead of paying import duty of 25% on a vehicle, you pay 0% import duty or import duty exemptions. So what we've created is an industrial evolution, I would say, or revolution, in line with the massive population growth and the economy growth that Kenya has seen over the past decade. What this investment looks like right now, it could be a $160 to $200 million investment, which is significantly sized. Right now, we are between 20 and 25% complete of our stage of development, with the opportunities to quadruple that investment over time. So a very, very exciting space. The reason why we've come here is, as I mentioned, this is industrial revolution where the existing industrial market of Nairobi is about 22 million square meters under roof. Less than 500,000 squares is A-grade in nature. So the opportunity to grow into A-grade logistics, distribution, light industrial facilities has a massive growth prospect. At the same time, we have dollarized all of our rental income. So a very, very exciting space for us.
Yeah, I can imagine that in an environment like this, having that dollar income is probably a good hedge for a lot of for a lot of things. As a group, so it's definitely attractive from that point of view. Keen to understand the dynamic of these types of projects in a country like Kenya, right? Who leads, some of these developments? Because I spent about 6 years at school in the Eastern Cape way back when, and I remember back in those days what we used to The one of the big signature projects in that province was the Coja Industrial Development Zone. And we spent a lot of time looking at that and all the different projects. And, you know, that was a government-led sort of initiative as well as a provincial government, you know, led initiative. And you've got your sets of incentives trying to get more private sector players to come in. So keen to understand, in a place like Kenya, when you're doing something like Nairobi Gate, right, is that the same type of dynamic? Or do private players such as yourselves come to the table and you make a pitch to the Kenyan government to say, hey, guys, we think we can add value in this way?
I think that it's been a complicated process. I would start there. It hasn't been a pitch that we made to the Kenyan government at all. Where we are today is blood, sweat, and tears from executives like Mark. You know, really, I think Mark has probably been here 24 times, as well as our full legal team, full development team, full construction team, town planning divisions. It's a complicated process where you have to take it upon yourself to get everything that you need in place and then pull the trigger. So in 2016 and 2017 is when we started eyeing out this parcel of land. And only today are we 25% complete. So it's taken a significant amount of time and collaboration with various parastatals. You know, we have KPLC, Kenya Power Authority here, or the Kenya Revenue Authority here, very similar to any jurisdiction like Coja, not knowing exactly the, you know, the intricacies and complications of that. But, you know, dealing with any private and public entity is complicated, but it's been driven by ourselves internally.
All right. You know, maybe we can bring Mark in on this front, because, you know, you're the one who has been said, you know, blood, sweat and tears, you know, has gone into making all of this a reality. Maybe you could give us a picture of what it takes to make something like that happen. And maybe it's a good opportunity to also contrast that with what some of the permissions processes look like compared to the local market in South Africa.
Yeah, look, so I mean, as Dean alluded to, you know, there's a lot of red tape and a lot of hoops to jump through. And initially, you know, we were learning a hell of a lot. And, you know, one of the reasons that we chose Kenya as an investment destination is the legal system is very, very well established. Land tenure, we can understand there. The legal system protects the citizens, and, you know, various fundamentals like that were very, very important for us. So, you know, like I said, we had to learn a lot. And, you know, obviously a lot of the officials and various ministers and, you know, various governmental institutions changed personnel, you know, throughout the years. And, you know, it has been a long road, this. What I can say now is, you know, the SEZ board, CESA, and the Kenyan government and the Kenyan Revenue Services have come to the party. They're very, very keen to assist us. They want projects like Nairobi Gate there. They want to be able to showcase it. They want to be able to show that special economic zones do work and do exist. So we have found in the last year or 18 months a lot more assistance. And I think that comes from, you know, maybe the governmental institutions looking at many, many projects over many, many years that don't come to fruition. Nairobi Gate is a reality. It has come to fruition. It is currently being developed out. It is a real showcase, albeit it's a private development, but it's a showcase for the Kenyan government and various institutions to show that things like special economic zones and, you know, revenue services working with customs and things like that do actually work and will benefit the country. So, you know, from that aspect, it is a success story, which we're very, very proud of. And Dean's been working incredibly closely with all of these institutions since he joined us and has actually brought this to a reality.
Yeah, it certainly does sound like there's a lot that goes into, you know, putting something like this together. And especially if someone is looking at, you know, timelines that start as early as, you know, the 2016, date that Dean spoke about earlier on, and actually making that, a reality. Because we are a business platform, though, one of the things that I'm keen to understand is, when it comes to funding something like this, maybe what is the approach? And I'm going to ask both of you, you know, because you're both in the same situation, but sitting one in Joburg, one in Nairobi, maybe you could talk to us about what the funding looks like. And I ask because I can imagine that whatever you're considering at the start in 2016 versus where we are now, you're in a somewhat different, you know, type of environment, right? Interest rates are not where they were. The appetite of capital allocators, as well as people that are willing, you know, to put their money forward for such projects, the risk appetite is completely different. Because obviously a lot of attitudes have been affected by COVID-19 and the recovery thereon, and where we are now with, you know, interest rates, inflation, all of that stuff. So, yeah, just keen to understand, you know, on both fronts. And I think, Dean, I'll start with you.
I'd actually prefer Mark to start. You know, the reason I say that is ultimately the group, you know, started, and we use our balance sheet in South Africa, you know, to fund further developments in Kenya. So I think a good starting point actually be with Mark.
Yeah. So look, I mean, we have a sizable private portfolio in South Africa. We have incredibly good relationships with the lending institutions, all the different banks. We have a high quality portfolio with long leases and blue chip tenants, located in investable grade areas. So, you know, perhaps it's, you know, we always say what we do is not really rocket science. It's about being able to get ready to take advantage of opportunities and have decent relationships and a track record. So, you know, there's a few fundamentals. Yeah, so, you know, you obviously have to have good locations. You have to have a proper business plan, what you're going to develop out. You then have to do what you say you're going to do and attract the tenants. So, you know, essentially we are after bankable rental income. And, you know, our tenants, the reason why we concentrate on blue chips or businesses which we would describe as blue chips, you know, potentially looking at their financials and things like that, is they can demonstrate an ability to pay rent. And rent is our revenue. And rent is what the banks are going to look at. So, you know, if we can satisfy these certain fundamentals, then the banks are generally willing to lend us the money. You know, Kenya was a little bit more difficult. There was a lot of development happening in Kenya, you know, 10 years ago on the commercial office side of things. A lot of lending institutions piling into Kenya. You know, Kenya was one of the darlings, you know, with massive GDP growth and very, very bright prospects and things like that. So, you know, obviously, putting the business plan of Nairobi Gate together, we involved various lending institutions who came to the party. One of the biggest and most important things, which Dean alluded to earlier, was a dollar-based rental or a dollar-based income. So, you know, we've managed to achieve that, and we continue to strive to do that. So, you know, on the back of having a sizable portfolio here, a good reputation, along with Actis, obviously, and their various balance sheets and various funds, we managed to put this together and attract lending institutions. And like I said, this is a reality. It's happening. You know, Dean is sitting in the park right now talking to us there. There's buildings all around him. So, yeah, we're very, very happy with where we are at the moment. And, yeah, look forward to quite a buoyant future there, I would say.
Mm. So maybe, Dean, what you can help us to maybe understand is the other side of the equation, right? The returns profile of something like a Nairobi Gate. To my understanding and from what I've read, you're looking at textiles, and those are the types of clients and businesses that you guys are housing, in this particular park. So when it comes to that, you talk about 25% completion. What does 25% completion look like, Because when I'm looking at you right now, people are listening to this, but I'm looking at, Dean right now, and he's looking like, nice looking office. I can see what's going on in the windows behind. Are there tenants? Have you guys already started making, some of that money back? Yeah. What is it looking like right now?
Yeah, definitely. I'll start off with just, maybe echoing a bit of Mark's, previous topic is, the appetite for both combination of debt and equity, which is how we fund our developments, in a place like Kenya, using a balance sheet that we do have, has been incredible. If you look at the defensive asset class, the macros, which I'll get into some time about what this place looks like, in combination with double-digit dollarized yields, the people you would want to come here. I spend all my money here. Anyone should spend their money here. Banks approach us every single week. Actually, it's quite an exciting time. And what this park looks like, and I can maybe give a picture of it. It's 1.1 kilometers long by 400 meters wide, where we've deployed approximately $10 million or so worth of bulk infrastructure. Now, being South African and now Kenyan, infrastructure is taken for granted in SA. Accessibility to roads, power, water, sewer, walkways, gatehouses, fence lines. We don't have this provision on a macro scale that South Africa does. So if you could picture a beautiful field, which is 13 kilometers from OR Tambo International Airport in a northerly direction, like the R21, like Plumbago is. And if you could picture what Plumbago looked like 10 years ago, Mark, I would say it's a very, very fair description of what Nairobi Gate will look like in some time. What it looks like now, however, is a 40,000 square meter industrial park, where we have the ability, to build 200,000 square meters of space. So still quite a lot of green land area with all of the bulk infrastructure already in place. Mainly, if you could picture it like a spine road, which dissects the center of the development, access straight off the highway, and then it ribs off into each of the developments, where we've created a diverse platform of offerings in line with market expectations, which include buildings for the SME market, which are smaller units from 500 square meters, all the way to buildings that are 10,000 square meters used for humanitarian aid and distribution, or companies that are importing coffee, but from EAC, or say it's not imports because EAC stands for one region, but deriving coffee from one area, processing the coffee, exporting the coffee to Nespresso. All the coffee that Nespresso, the small pods drink that's distributed to Austria, actually comes from Kenya. So it's an interesting dynamic platform that provides infrastructure and tax incentives, which I think we should talk about a bit, to promote the Kenyan economy.
Mm. Let's maybe get into some of those incentives that are put in place. I think you alluded to it a little bit, at the beginning of the conversation, to say that, Kenyan authorities have come to the party, and, there's a couple of offerings. So, if you are talking to some fellow investors, what are some of the highlights that you think would appeal, to them to say, hey, guys, actually, either we've gotten a good deal or, this is actually an area where more people should be investing?
Yeah, I'll start off with the definition of an SEZ or special economic zone. I think it's important for the audience to also get a depiction of this. An SEZ is an area which is a geographic boundary whereby it's deployed by the Kenyan government or any government where if you deploy your light industrial facility, you will be granted certain tax benefits which are abnormal to the existing legislation. So if you can picture a large grass field and 40% has been gazetted by the Kenyan government in this instance, where the SEZ authority will evaluate the impact that an international, local, or regional company is creating through employment, knowledge transfer, and foreign direct investment. And should you deploy in this area versus outside of the area, you're going to pay only 10% tax versus someone outside of the area, they'll pay 30% tax. So it's extremely interesting, focal points. These zones are also not been pioneered by Kenya. They've actually been pioneered, by China, actually, and by Asia, where they deployed over 500 special economic zones or export processing zones or industrial development zones or free trade zones. They have the same fundamental qualities where if you deploy them, you get tax benefits. And the reason why China is the industrial economic powerhouse that it is today is simply because of these zones. So what we've done in Kenya is we've taken a very similar framework, deployed it here, and we're offering investors, tenants, developers, unparalleled competitive advantages within the EAC region, compounded further by the macroeconomic conditions of Kenya, which is the cost of power, the availability of power, the availability of water, the ease of doing business, the legal transparency of doing business, the availability of employment, the levels of education. If you're looking at an African continental deployment outside of, let's say South Africa, with the tax area that we have created, with the macros we have, it's a non-brainer. Like genuinely, it's an exciting space that everyone should be focusing on.
It certainly sounds like an exciting space. And I think you've just contextualized, quite well what that investment opportunity, looks like, particularly, some of the incentives, particularly the tax bit. That's quite a big differential, that people can be taking advantage of. And I guess it's one of those things where it's a model that has worked, in other parts of the world, and is clearly, as long as you execute well on it, then it has the potential to do, a lot of the things that you are speaking about. Yes, Dean.
Yeah, so definitely. I mean, I'll just contextualize this also for you. You're asking about the textile space. I reckon that this is the most exciting industrial park that East Africa has launched in its history. Genuinely saying that. We've launched now a textile park that is 100,000 square meters of potential space, where industrialists who manufacture on behalf of Calvin Klein, Polo, Helly Hansen, Nike, for example, are all looking at our park. And it can create over, in my opinion, 10,000 jobs very, very easily. It will promote easily $50 to $60 million worth of investments. And to just demonstrate the benefit is, if you are importing certain inputs that are required for the textile and apparel industry. And this is, the shirt that you're wearing today is probably manufactured in Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, Vietnam. You should go have a look. Now, I'm trying to create a platform that is going to be competitive on the global scale in Kenya on the back end of a large Ethiopian exodus that will allow you to buy your shirt cheaper than you would because of the input variables and the tax benefits. This is, if you input the raw yarn or the cotton or whatever your shirt is made from, or your buttons, let's say, you're going to pay zero import duty, zero. Once you then process that into a final product being your shirt, 90% of these products are exported to the States or other, let's say, first world economies. That's the simple nature of this particular industry. You pay no import duty, no export duty, and your corporation tax for the revenue that you've created, as I mentioned, is massively diluted. So the cost of your shirt is going to be simply cheaper, and all the profit margins of these large scale textile industrialists are going to be greater. So yeah, watch the space. It's going to be exciting.
Yeah, sounds very exciting. I was actually just thinking now that because you keep mentioning that EAC region, and you know, someone who's you know, participating in something like that, there's been a lot of you know, great cooperation between some of those particular countries, you know, and that in the particular in that region, I think it's Tanzania, Kenya, Burundi, Uganda, and Rwanda, if I remember correctly. And when I think about all the stuff that's been done around ease of movement, you know, trying to encourage trade between the countries, and also all of the incentives, you know, to actually make it some type of a hub. You know, to then get goods, you know, from the continent to the rest of the world, is certainly exciting from, you know, that point of view. And maybe at this point, as we're starting to land the conversation, I want to bring, you know, Mark back into the conversation to get a sense of these types of projects. You guys are no stranger to them. You have investments, you know, today we're talking about your investments in Kenya, but you guys have a number of holdings in a country like, you know, South Africa. What's your outlook, you know, at the moment about, you know, some of these, some of such projects, you know, in South Africa, the ones that are existing, perhaps ones that are to come online, you know, how are you looking at it? Dean paints quite an exciting picture of an outlook in Kenya. What is the equivalent in South Africa?
Look, I mean, yeah, I mean, we're very excited about all of the developments. I mean, particularly what's happening in Kenya. But yeah, like you say, we do have sizable investments in South Africa as well. And I actually wanted to touch a little bit on, and I'm sure Dean was heading that way with the sort of infrastructure and what we've done in Kenya, and, you know, developed this basically out of a, you know, a field, let's call it, like almost something like on the R21, like we have near Oa Tambo here in South Africa. But, you know, we've generally concentrated on developing nodes. And I did touch on it earlier, you know, that we believe are investable nodes or nodes which have already had a track record where we can get hold of sizable land holdings and contribute to all of that. So, you know, I mean, we've got huge holdings in the likes of, you know, Limbro Park, Longmeadow Business Park, a new area to the south of that, I mean, to the north of that, called Long Lake. You know, we've just completed, you know, sort of 50 or 60,000 square meters of developments there in various units aiming at the greater logistics, industry. We're currently busy just up the road from our offices, which are actually in Longmeadow, Business Park. There's another new area called Meadowview. We are currently constructing about, 35,000 square meters there for a company called Renus Logistics. And we have another 10,000 square meters to go, in terms of available developable space there, which we'll be leasing out to third parties. We have a sizable holding, near Rand Airport or at Rand Airport called, Dakota Precinct. We've taken a land position there of 25 hectares. So the first phase of MIDI units is fully let and fully developed out. We'll be embarking on phase two of the MIDI units fairly soon. There we are holding back the rest of the park for big box users, sort of 20 to 30,000 square meter users, which will again traditionally be probably from, you know, the FMCG pharmaceutical, greater logistics sector. Yeah, so we're trading well in South Africa. We've seen some rental growth. I mean, rentals were fairly stagnant for about 3 or 4 years. You know, we're seeing growth sort of 10-15% on real rental rates. That's not your escalation rates, unfortunately, at the moment, but everybody will be playing catch up. So yeah, we're very, very buoyant. You know, we're seeing some tentativeness in the market, which I think is very, very normal in the lead up to elections. We are not expecting really anything to change post elections. So we'll be expecting a, you know, the demand to continue and to, you know, translate into bankable leases after the elections. So yes, on the whole, we're very positive and very buoyant.
Nice. And at least we get a sense of what's going on in that particular space in South Africa. And it at least sounds like there's a lot of activity, you know, which is good, especially at a time where, you know, people are looking for so much growth. Anything that can hint at growth, investment, expansion of some sort, you know, is a good thing. So at least, you know, we can see that there is, you know, quite a bit of movement on that front. Now, the part I want to end this discussion on is I'm going to start here with Mark, because you're in South Africa, and it's something that you mentioned at the beginning of the conversation. You're talking about the fact that e-commerce, now that's a space that I personally look at quite a bit, and I was just curious to get your take on what has e-commerce done, or do you think it's going to do going forward for industrial or commercial property, you know, as a whole. I'm not a property expert, so you can help me with the most appropriate terms here. What do you think it's going to do or is going to do for this space? There's a lot of excitement around. Obviously, Amazon has just come in. Takealot invests quite a bit in the space. You know, how do you see those types of things developing over time? Is there opportunity for yourselves?
Look, there's definitely opportunity for ourselves. I mean, we see it as a great disruptor. I think generally, you know, everybody's well aware that, you know, Africa's potentially behind the curve on the e-commerce on the e-commerce side of things. There's various statistics there which I can't recall offhand, but you know, it's going to run into double digit growth. You know, we've got the likes of Temu that everybody's talking about in South Africa now, that seems to have taken the market by storm. You know, Amazon launched last week or the week before officially. So, you know, we've obviously got Takealot. We've got Shein. So, you know, and there's a lot of other small users that people don't even know about that your moms and pops stores, distribute with and bring product in with and sell product with. So, yeah, we're seeing it as a huge, huge disruptor. I mean, you know, from your owner driver, you know, on the street, you know, literally that's now got a job and who's delivering for an e-commerce giant. You know, that's a tiny, tiny little example of what we're expecting things to do for the economy. We're just going to see huge growth, massive job creation. You know, a lot of spending, a lot of public spending, obviously, you know, people buying all of these things online. So, yeah, we see it as a huge growth sector. You know, we're not quite sure what it's going to do for your, you know, your traditional retail sector. But, yeah, I think it will obviously have an effect on that. But, you know, I don't think you'll ever be able to take the human element out of it completely in terms of, you know, sometimes people want to touch and feel things. So you've always got that human aspect. But, you know, we're seeing growth in the sector. I mean, we do own a couple of the Takealot facilities and various other e-commerce companies as well. So, yeah, it's an exciting space. And, yeah, we really believe it's in its infancy here. So, yeah, I would say watch the space. It only has growth potential, simply.
Yeah, definitely. Lots of growth potential on that side. I've had opportunity to visit one or two facilities for the likes of Takealot. Huge. I think the size and the scale, people don't often realize what's happening in the background when they make an order online. Dean, in Kenya, obviously, a project like Nairobi Gate, you're servicing textile clients and all that. Are you guys affected, or do you think some of the secular trends around e-commerce will be influencing, you know, your space in any way, whether it's responding to, you know, increased demand for manufacturing of, you know, certain textile items, all of that?
Yeah, I think eventually it will also be a hell of an exciting space for us, but I think we are 20 years behind. the market is completely different, you know, where even the address system, by a bit of history, is Nairobi was designed in the early 1900s for 500,000 people. Is a constituency of 8 million people. And what has consequently happened by way of result is the address system is almost non-existent. So that will be one obstacle. And, you know, each industrialists, where if you're buying a phone, you know, from Apple, or buying you know, a set of new headphones also from takealot.com, is the manufacturers here, they actually do their supply chain themselves. So until the e-commerce platform and the human factor of people wanting to see, feel, and touch, it's still, you know, it's almost like a bargaining basis. And there's still huge markets here that we go to, you know, to go and buy your tomatoes, go buy your things, you know. So it's a negotiation at the same time. So there definitely will be a spin-off over it after time. There's a company called Jumia and Copia Kenya, which do occupy the space. They have seen trials and tribulations, both of them. I would foresee someone like Amazon to come here in some time, or even takealot.com for some time, but you need to know the market. And this would be initiated from the companies that are actually manufacturing the products, and then importing that into a centralized DC and then distributing that to the end users. But it'll take some time.
It certainly will. And that's where we end off. Interestingly enough, you know, that comment that you're making, Dean, I remember a couple of years ago, hearing, at least from the research I was doing, that one of the big reasons why Amazon had largely stayed out of the African market as a whole, you know, whether you're talking Nigeria, South Africa, any country, was because of some of those logistical issues, you know, things like your addressing, the informality of a lot of areas, you know, how do you even go about locating someone on a map? And you've found a lot of people trying to come up with interesting what you call the solutions, you know, to some of those things, platforms like What Three Words and all of that stuff, you know, trying to address, you know, some of those issues. So as I said, that's where we end off. It has been a really great discussion, just talking about, you know, industrial property, but more specifically, you know, special economic zones. And we're talking about Nairobi Gate, which is, you know, a huge project that's happening there. It's taken quite a number of years, you know, for the team to actually, you know, get to the point that they are. But, you know, they are bullish about their prospects, excited about the fact that, you know, they are in the phase where they've now had 25% of the project, you know, now complete, according to, you know, what Dean is saying. And he actually sees a lot of potential, you know, in that particular space, looking at, the, you know, the textile market and the different opportunities that are going to be offered, you know, from that particular sector, especially as some of the big name brands globally use, you know, that part of the world as a way to either distribute, you know, or manufacture some of their goods. Also talking about the job creation prospects, you know, in that part of Africa, and how they are also helping, you know, from a group point of view, helping themselves by, you know, getting some of that dollar-based income, you know, onto their books, which is definitely, you know, a good thing. We ended off talking about e-commerce. He says in that part of the world, about, you know, 20 or so years behind. So there's a lot of room, you know, for growth that they can take on. Some of the companies he mentioned that are already occupying the likes of Jumia. We've interacted with them. So we wait to see how that goes on. And also, you know, on Mark's side in South Africa, talking about the different property holdings here and the outlook for South Africa, especially because there are projects that are coming on that they do have, and their projects coming online, which points to the fact that there is progress going on, and anything that moves in terms of anything just ticking forward is usually a sign of good things. And then I think, you know, what was, you know, quite interesting is also just hearing the funding aspect and how some of the funding discussions have changed, and, you know, just contextualizing for us rather, you know, what that looks like for them. So that's been it. It has been a great discussion. As I said, we were in conversation, you know, with the team. We were talking to Dean Shiloh, who is the managing director at Impact North, as well as Mark Truscott, who is the head of leasing over at Improve On. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being with us today.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks very much.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So from myself and the rest of the team, it is a good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.